Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
So I hear the term ghosting, unfortunately, when people talk about their dating lives. Like, I went out with this guy, and then I tried texting him 2 or 3 times, and he ghosted me. That's a very common phrase we hear. But apparently in the workplace, employers and employees can ghost each other, which doesn't sound like a very good combination. It doesn't sound like it's a good one-sided thing either. So we're going to talk a little bit about it this morning with Julie Bauke. Julie is a career strategist. She comes on the show very frequently, and we are chatting about ghosting in the workplace. Good morning, Julie. How are you?
Good. Yeah, it's bad form no matter which side of the table you sit on.
Yeah, no kidding. So give us like a scenario, if you don't mind, Julie, because like I said, it's a very common phrase for dating, but I don't know if I've heard of this situation in the workplace.
It's actually been going on from employers for as long as I've been in this business, which is
a couple of decades.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I was reading this study and it's I found a stat that actually surprised even me. It says 75% of job seekers have been ghosted by a company. Here's the shocking part: after a job interview. So think about this: you have prepared, you have gotten all dressed up, you've done all this work to go in and sit down with a human to talk about a job.
Mm-hmm.
And from the employer's perspective, what ghosting means is you come in, spend an hour with us. I had a client one time who spent an entire day with a company, and then you never hear from them again.
Wait, how does that even happen? This is blowing my mind.
Yeah,
I've heard of like where, so now I've heard the situation where you go in, you do a full walkthrough, you meet everybody and you're like, oh, I must have gotten the job. But then you find out the next week, oh, actually, you know, we went with somebody else. Like that I've heard of. And you're like, wait, that's horrible.
Yes.
But to just not hear from the company, that's crazy. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't mean to laugh. That's terrible.
No. Yeah, I had a client one time. She was interviewing for a chief financial officer job, and she spent hours prepping. They had her do a presentation. She was working directly with an external recruiter. You know, it was a huge task, many hours of prep, and then she spent the day with them. She could not get a response from either the recruiter, outside recruiter, or the company. What they do is they lead you to sort of like, well, I guess no news is bad news. And it's sort of like, it's very cowardly. It's like, well, if you don't hear back from us, just assume you didn't get it. In the meantime,
that's terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible. And this candidate I was telling you about, she said, I'll never use that recruiter, that external recruiter, because of the way he treated me. And this company, you know, she's kind of laughed. She's like, well, you know, I tried following up 2 or 3 times. All you have to say is, we went another direction. We found somebody else who is a better fit. And I shake my head at the number of employers who think after someone has invested all this time in you that it's okay to just go radio silent. So this is not a new term from the employer side.
That
it is
totally
a new term from the job seeker side, though.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think this is totally inappropriate no matter which way you spin it. But
terrible.
This is just so, I had no idea that employers did. So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, my listeners know, I like to go to Disney World a lot, Julie Bauke. That's a thing I like to do.
Okay.
I'm a big Disney girl.
Okay.
So I recently, you know, I interviewed for a travel agent side job. Don't worry, everyone. I'm not announcing on the air that I'm leaving. But I wanted to like pick up, you know, just some side work now that my son's going to school full time and I want to get some perks and I want to go to Disney for cheaper. So, but when I spoke with my potential employer, if you will, you know, a week ago, she's like, listen, we will be telling every person whether you got the job or you didn't, you will get an email on Tuesday to let you know, whatever the day was, that you either got it or you didn't. And that's always been typically the response with no matter what job I've ever gone for is like, you will get a response whether it works or it doesn't. So please, you know, don't reach out. Like we promise we'll get back to you. And unless it's kind of a cold call thing, like, hey, I stopped by your office. I spoke to someone. I'm looking to hear from someone. Like, that's so crazy to me. So that's been around for a long time.
It
but
is.
The employee side, you said,
So first of all, I was shocked that 75% say that. I mean, that is a huge number. I would have thought 25-30%. So yes, bad form all the way around. And in a market where there is still a talent shortage, even though there's all kinds of wacky stuff going on, You do not want that to be your reputation.
Yeah, seriously.
But,
like,
yeah. So now here we are. So you think about simple supply and demand. Back in when there's more of something, and when you have something more people want, you almost feel emboldened to just take a let them eat cake attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just bad human form. We don't like to give bad news, but for heaven's sakes, if you've ever been left hanging when you're really feeling vulnerable anyway because you're unemployed, it's the worst, because all it does is contribute to the narrative that no one's going to hire you.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So here we come along. The pendulum swings the other way. Now we've got more, in some fields, we have more jobs than people. So employees or potential employees, job seekers, are saying, well, turnabout's fair play here, people. And I don't feel really bad about doing this to you because some other companies did that to me. And so it's the simple stuff is we contact you for an interview, you don't respond. Or we ask you to come in for an interview, you don't show up. But the most egregious case on the job seeker side is we hire you, you agree, and then you don't show up on day one. And that's happened to 20% of employers that responded to the survey. And to me, that just makes me cringe because, you know, you have, in my mind, you have more to lose from a reputation and an opportunity standpoint than an employer does. And believe me, people talk.
Yeah.
And when you don't show up, your name will be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I actually remember the names of people who, you know, did that to me in a lot of different scenarios when I was in the corporate world, you know, in the dating world, whatever. I remember who did that to me. And you are no better than the employer if you do this. And then on top of this, you know, the companies are complaining that people, that the Gen Z, that the younger generations, millennials, Gen Z, are the worst. So on top of that, you know, that generation tends to lack a little bit in their communication skills and in their face-to-face talking to human skills. And so they just feel like, I'm just going to disappear. What are the chances they'll ever find me again?
Wow.
And you know, so let's say that I don't show up at a company on Monday, and it's company ABC, and my hiring manager, the HR person, my team members, maybe I've met, I'm letting all of them down. And so you might think, big deal. I don't want to work for the ABC company anyway. The problem is all of those people who met you and remember you, they will move on to other companies. And you may want to work for one of those other companies. And your under the table reputation will be, do not hire that person.
Right.
We were supposed to, when I worked at ABC company, they didn't show up. They blah, 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 blah. And you will miss out on an opportunity that you may not even have known existed. And so you have to operate with integrity.
So we're chatting with Julie Bauke. Julie, I've already gotten some comments and questions from some of our listeners. One that just came in. So what do you do if you're a potential employee? And we're talking about ghosting, by the way. Sorry, didn't recap for you. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about being ghosted by an employer, or if an employee ghosts a company that they are potentially going to work for. So the question we got from one of our listeners, so what do you do, Julie? You go for this job, you feel like you've got it, or even if you don't, even if you went and you're like, listen, this is my dream job, I want to do this, this is what I want to, you know, everything, and you just get ghosted. What can you do? So, like, if the company's just not responding to you, what do you do?
So here's what we tell our clients. So let's say that you go for a job and they say, we'll take you, Melissa, with your potential Disney travel agent job.
Yes, you tell me. What do I do?
They say, we'll get back to you. We'll get back to you by Tuesday. Okay? Tuesday comes and goes. Give them Wednesday. Maybe later day Thursday. Follow up and say, hey, just circling back. You said that you would get back to us by Tuesday. Just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. I remain interested. Okay? So if they say we're going to follow up by Tuesday, give them Tuesday. Don't follow up before Tuesday. Give them a day or two, because we all know stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
Then you hear nothing. Okay? Then I would say, now we're on Thursday. I would say, give it till Monday. And you might want to follow up one more time and just say, just circling back one more time. I remain interested. Please let me know if there's anything else you need from me. So do you see how that's professional? And that's like, what else do you need from me? Sort of, instead of, when are you going to get back to me, dude? You said Tuesday, and now it's Thursday. Now it's Monday. You know, so you want to stay professional. You want to stay understanding that that sometimes people and organizations get overenthusiastic about how quickly their process went. So two follow-ups, okay? Then I call this this is if you don't get a job, but you still want to stay in their files and on good terms, or if they just completely, you haven't heard back after two, I follow up with a third that says, dear so-and-so, I'll assume by this point I'm no longer a candidate for this job. Thank you for considering me. I was very impressed with everyone I met and with the opportunity. Please keep me in mind if another position opens up that you think I'd be suited for. All the best. So in other words, you close the loop by saying, I'm going to assume that you're no longer interested. What that does is if they actually are interested, but their world blew up and they haven't been able to get back to anybody, you'll hear back from them right away. But if you don't hear back, then the assumption, just go on your merry way and say, okay, keep that filed away. Because, if I ever interact with this company again, then I will know what to expect. But I call this, so sometimes we're left so raw because we're so mad that they, that they've treated us like this. So I call this the big boy letter or the big girl letter, where you reach back out and say, hey, I'm just going to assume there's no interest on your part, or I'm going to assume you've moved on. All the best. Live your best life, blah, blah, blah. And it gives you sort of that they didn't close the loop, but I did. But it also, what it also says is I'm professional, I'm a person with many options, and it actually makes you more attractive. Does that make sense?
And so it absolutely makes sense. I'm totally on board with you. Anytime I could put my big girl pants on, I'm with you. Here's the only thing, Kristen, yeah. I'm curious about, Julie, I'm curious, you wouldn't go a step further and report that company? So this was another question we got from somebody do you contact the Department of Labor? Don't say anything? You do nothing?
No. I mean, the Department of Labor has more to worry about than whether they got back to you, honestly. You just take it as, everybody's overwhelmed, Melissa. Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing two jobs, maybe three. And while I know it feels really bad from your perspective, because you're already feeling vulnerable anyway, and you got really excited, but job search is like a roller coaster. There are highs and there are lows, and you've got to learn to navigate those with your professionalism intact. If they didn't get, I'll tell you what, the number of times that a company said, I'll get back to you by Tuesday, and they actually do, is smaller than you might think, because they sometimes overestimate their ability to get all the opinions mm-hmm. together, get everybody's feedback on you, and then they get distracted in another direction. And just give them some space and say, I'm going to move on. And you know what? They may come back around. I have seen it happen where someone does this big boy, big girl letter saying, hey, I'm just going to move on. I'm assuming you're not interested. Leave it to the winds. Move on to other things, they come back around. I am so sorry we didn't get back to you. We had a huge customer problem, and it was an all-hands-on-deck situation. Thank you so much for your time. We've decided not to fill this position. Or, look, we're back on track recruiting for this position. Thank you so much for your patience. So you always want to make that bridge recrossable.
And be the most attractive that you could be, no matter what.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And even if you've decided, even if you've decided that you don't want to work for that company anymore, you never know when, again, somebody from that company will move on and remember you fondly. Look you back up on their calendar to see who this person was they interviewed or they liked so much. Mm. So the trick is, even though you're feeling emotional and I would never do that to someone, that's good. I'm glad you wouldn't. And there's a lot of people who've been ghosted who go on to, because they know how it felt, go on to never do anything like that again. You're responsible for you and how you behave.
Right, for your
and
own actions, absolutely.
Taking the high road will never bite you in the butt. It just mm-hmm. doesn't.
Yeah, that's true, Julie. And I think, Julie, it's something that you have to kind of practice that, whether it's with jobs, whether it's going into school, whether, you know, whatever it is, you have to, you know, practice that skill of taking the higher road and also just not letting, kind of like not sweating the small stuff. Like, you know, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And if it's not, I think I was always taught that, you know, like if in a relationship, if it's meant to be, you can let them go and they'll come back to you. Or, you know, I don't know. I've heard all those kinds of, you know, and I totally believe those things. So it's sort of the same in a job market. You know, you go into a job, you put everything you want into it. And hopefully if it works out, that's great. And if it doesn't, then, you know, maybe there's a different journey that we just can't see yet that you're supposed to be on. So.
We always say, you know, that job search is like dating. If those of you who are married remember back in those days, you have to kiss a lot of frogs. And, you know, and you know, what's a frog for you is somebody else's prince or princess. But,
true.
You know, you really, I mean, that's a part of it. Part of finding the right job for you is interviewing for a bunch of the wrong jobs. And you don't always get the, you don't always get to make the call.
Yeah.
You know, so you are going to interview places and you're going to be like, yeah, I don't think that's the right place for me. But employers do the same thing.
Right, exactly.
And we can't take it personally because in most cases, when you get rejected, you know, in a lot of cases, we look back and go, oh, I really wanted that job. But then everything I heard since then is that it's a very bad place to work. And so I'm really glad. You know, we end up where we're supposed to.
Yeah.
And having those bad experiences along the way where we get rejected is just a part of the process. And so your job is to manage between your ears so that the highs don't let you get too high and the lows don't take you down too low.
Julie Bauke, this is why we have you on every week. I think you're super helpful, and I appreciate you coming on and talking to us about ghosting and how to handle it. Thank you so much.
Thanks. We'll talk next week, Melissa. Good luck with that Disney job.
Thank you. I'm certainly not riding everything on it. I would just love a discount next time I go down there. That's really what I would like to do. So thank you. Appreciate it. That's Julie Bauke here on WICC. So many of you know I am not on the TikTok, so I'm a little behind the eight ball. Thank God I have a young intern. I have younger sisters who keep me in the loop. But I pull up this website, and I don't even know who this guy is. But just seeing his picture, my intern Isabella goes, oh, I can't stand that guy. So obviously, many people are familiar with Andrew Tate. But maybe you, the listener, are in the same boat as I am, and you have no idea who this guy is. But apparently, in recent weeks, he has been banned from several social media platforms because of the content he's been spewing out there, offensive comment, and what he has been promoting online. He's been branded, just to give you an idea, he's been branded as the king of toxic masculinity for the content he puts out there for young boys. So to talk about this a little bit, get the warnings out there, understand this a little bit more, of course, Krista Carnes is here, who is our social media consultant. Good morning, Krista.
Good morning, Melissa.
Literally, my intern just said to me as we started this, oh my gosh, I can't stand that guy. And I thought, I've never even heard of him until you and I had started talking about him. But yeah, he's got a resume that makes me kind of want to throw up as well. I'm not a big fan. Can't say I am.
Yeah, no, totally. In fact, that's when I heard about all the bans, like that's when he came on my radar. And I have a almost 14-year-old and a 12-year-old. And I said, hey, what do you guys think of Andrew Tate? And he's like, oh yeah, we know him. And I was like, but he's so virulently anti-women, and he talks about, you know, hurting women if they don't do what he wants. And I mean, it's, you know, it's highly provocative. And, you know, there's something about that kind of personality that, you know, it just generates more likes and more clicks. So, you know, whether this guy even believes what he's saying, I don't even know, but he's amassed this following. And due to the bans, which I think is the most interesting part, because of the bans, my son's like, oh, no, he has a whole bunch of other people posting his content. So they're like, you know, they're defying the bans by he's telling his followers, chop up my content, you know, misspell my name. So if somebody's searching for it, for his actual name, they don't find it, or use this hashtag. So the content is still out there. And I think I think that he's like, you know, creating this little army of minions to disseminate this hate, because it brings him money and it brings him clicks, and you know, he's not alone. There's some other ones out there that are pretty high profile. For, you know, this guy happens to be misogynistic. This other guy, Nick Fuentes, is, you know, a known white nationalist. You know what I mean? And he's out there getting people to spread his content.
So
it's just
sick.
Really scary that. And they really do, go after these younger kids, particularly, you know, kids that are sort of exploring, and this guy in particular, this Andrew Tate, with his relationships to women. I mean, it's just so negative on how to treat people. And I think most kids are, you know, probably know it's problematic, but if you're predisposed to, like, if you need a, if it resonates with you or you're angry about something else, like, it's going to, I have to think it's like an earworm, right? Like, it gets in there and it's going to change how you see the world.
And I have to be honest, Krista, we are living in a very different world. So I think we're getting a little better. I say that very lightly, but I think parents we still struggle with the whole, you know, keeping your kids in line, because it's very hard to do that when you have so many social media platforms, when kids are handed phones at 8 years old. I mean, I think you kind of lose control at a very young age. And unfortunately, I think we're also seeing where parents don't really step in and have those conversations. So just to give an idea. So we were talking to my son, Chase, who's only 4. But he will sometimes, you know, like, you know, how kids will kind of roughhouse and stuff. And sometimes he will, you know, how you'll like pinch someone, like, oh, like I pinched you, and then you pinch him back or whatever. He would like by accident, you know, pinch in an area at the upper part of a woman's body, me. And I had to sit down with him and explain to him that literally could be seen. Of course, I can't say sexual harassment, but I said to him, you cannot do that to women. You cannot touch women there. And I had to really sit down with my 4-year-old and have this conversation. And my husband then sat down, solidified it, and said, you need to listen to mom. This is not appropriate. This is not something that you do, you know. And this was a conversation we had to have with a 4-year-old. I don't know if those conversations are happening. And so if I had bypassed it, said, oh, he's just playing, he's just being a little kid, it's fine. And he becomes 8, 9 years old and somehow gets access to somebody like this, and it was never corrected, I can absolutely see where boys would be like, oh yeah, this guy knows what he's doing, he's very popular, women love him, they don't care, this is
look
okay.
How rich he is.
Right, this
look
is okay to do. I could totally see why he'd have followers. Absolutely. Absolutely. I could totally see it.
And he started on Big Brother. That's, you know, that reality.
Yeah, he was
show,
a contestant or something.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, like, he's been out there, and I think that a lot of kids, at least now, and this is on us too, is to talk about this idea of like what's real and what's not. This idea of like pseudo celebrity. I mean, this guy isn't he's only famous for being provocative, right?
Right,
like,
exactly.
He's only famous for saying these awful things.
Yeah.
And you have to keep up the game, right? But explaining that, you know, to a 13 or 14 year old becomes more popular.
It's hard.
They're getting
that's hard.
The age where they can.
Well, and you're archaic, yeah, right? Like, we're outdated. We don't know what we're talking about. Yeah, that's a hard conversation to have. That's challenging.
But I think it starts, and, you know, and I just think, you know, if I ever heard you saying something like that, we would have some serious consequences. I mean, knowing that it exists is one thing, regurgitating it
is another.
Teasing some, you know, when it starts to eke in. And so that's why I think it's most important to, like, listen to your own kids. So, you know, what do you think? Not, oh my God, this hateful guy, Andrew Tate. And, okay, mom, you're being so crazy. Versus, hey, have you ever heard of Andrew Tate? Oh yeah, he does this stuff. Just like your intern said, oh, he's disgusting. If I heard my kids say, great, he's disgusting, I'm going to feel a little bit better.
Right,
but
right.
Using it as fodder to be like, so how do you feel about this? Because you would never, would you say that to, you know, your neighbor friend across the street, the girl you've been going to school with since, you know, kindergarten? No. Because that's not, you know what I mean? Like, I
right.
think it's about
you have to kind of gauge it, but it's if you put your opinions out there, a lot of the times it does mean that they'll kind of just do the opposite. Like, okay, well, that's because mom, you know, hasn't been to school since the Stone Age. So what does she know? I tell you, the times are changing. I was talking to my intern in that commercial break, and I was saying, you know, even just the change in the generations, like when I was a kid, I think we had the birds and the bees talk when I was like 14 or something. But, you know, more. Right. I mean, I'm just saying it wasn't something that we were exposed to, though, Krista. We didn't even have cell phones or internet until I was in 8th grade. So, like, there was nothing that, unless you had somebody in your family who had a Playboy magazine, which I had never even heard of that, you know, sure, maybe I was sheltered, but I think you're having those conversations now in elementary school. You kind of have to. And we're talking this morning about influencers and what it's exposing your kids to with the example of Andrew Tate. So there's this documentary, Krista. I don't know if you've watched it. It's on Netflix, and it's called The Most Hated Person on the Internet. Have you seen it?
You know, it's funny. I started it, and then it was late, and I was like, I need to, like, wrap my head around. I was just too tired to watch it.
It's a lot.
It was just so much.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's very informative. It's very eye-opening. It's hard, though. It's hard to watch. And essentially, for people who haven't watched it or aren't familiar with it, it's kind of similar to this situation where you have a guy who created a website that basically exposes women in the worst way, and it's a hate website. It's I believe it's gone now, but it's a hate website that allowed people from anywhere in the world to post photos. It was like a revenge site. Like if you wanted to post photos of a girl you didn't like, you put them there, you bash them, and then millions of people get to comment and bash them too, and it just grew the viewership and things like that. Good Lord. So it was awful. And this kind of reminds me of that, which is what I wanted to segue to, which is not just what are your kids watching, but Krista, I wanted you to give advice to what are your kids posting, because like in these situations, these were girls who may have shared like a photo with an ex-boyfriend who they had been dating at the time or whatever. And just talking about being very, very careful with what your kids post, whether it's online or even through text message.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you have to be super careful. And you know, you have to, and I, you know, maybe not four, but like you have to start having these conversations with kids really young, because you know, the creation of media is becoming just so much more normal. I mean, I remember when we were having like a little family, you know, morning coffee, breakfast kind of play time when my kids were like, you know, 3 and 5, and we played music, and my 3-year-old started, and I was videotaping it, right? And my 3-year-old, three, started taking off his clothes, which is totally normal in a house. Like, you know, you can do that.
It happens,
but I was videotaping it, and I had to say, you never take off your clothes when somebody's videotaping you. I mean,
right.
I never thought I'd have to say something like that.
Well, that's how I felt the other day roughhousing with my son. I said I didn't think I'd have to tell my son you can't, you know, manhandle women at 4. I didn't think that was a conversation we would have to have, but we live in a world where I'm glad that you're a kind of parent who has that conversation, even if it's not more than a minute long, but it's something that you didn't just let it bypass and think, oh, it's harmless.
Well,
it's nothing.
But here's the flip side of that too, Melissa. He needs to know that nobody's allowed to manhandle him.
Correct,
either,
and that was
right?
also part of the lesson. Yes, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So it's you know, like if this, and I think that kids start to understand, or you can put into their minds, if something, especially when it's like, quite frankly, when it's like sexualized content, or potentially, like they can be exposed to it and you might not ever know, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think you have all these blocks on and you try. And I had to try to, I found out that there was like a fifth grader watching, you know, porn on internet. And obviously there was no restrictions in his house. And obviously he was sharing it. My kid knew like the leading website. I was like, why do you know that place?
Oh
like, why
gosh.
Do you even know that? And he was explaining it. And you know, we had to have this conversation. Like, it might, you know, what you see visually and how your body reacts and how your brain. But if you feel like, you know, if you get nervous in your stomach or something that mommy would not want you to watch it, that's a good sign. Like, you almost have to tell them the physiological responses. You know, like, you almost have to go to that level, I think, so that they can make sense of it. Because, I mean, it's like, do you ever remember, like, watching a movie when you were little, like walking in on your parents and it was like a rated R movie and it was like, I remember very clearly like flipping onto like The Exorcist and she was going, and I should not have been watching TV.
Oh, yes.
And like, I had so many questions and
right.
that was, you know, so long ago. But I think it's also about creating an environment where they can talk to you about what they've seen without you freaking out.
I was going to say,
right?
you kind of introduced that, which it seems like you've created that with like your own children, which is you have open conversation, but it almost seems like you, I don't want to say reward, but it's like you praise the fact that, you know, when your kids want to come to you and talk about it, it's not a, oh my gosh, I can't believe you'd hang out with these kids. And I can't believe that this goes on and you know, and having your own meltdown, but being like, hey, you know, like it's really great that your kids are open about those things instead of freaking out that, you know, somebody in their class passed around a porn site. You're having open conversation and your son doesn't have to feel like, oh, I was scared to tell mom and I made the right decision saying nothing. Like, it's good right. that they feel comfortable coming to you because you've allowed them to know, like, hey, if you come to me with stuff, I'm not going to attack you on it. You're learning. You don't know. You're confused. And you can't control all the time what you're being exposed to.
Right. And you're going to, but you, because you could see something on a bus. You could see something,
exactly.
you know, on a subway somewhere. And so you want to encourage the, I think the substance and drug use conversations and the messaging that have come out in the last, you know, 20 or so years is mm-hmm. a really good, like, touchstone. Like, you're going to see this, and this is why I don't want you to do this because, right. you know, I don't want you to drink before you're 21 because your brain's not developed enough and it can really cause you some long-term damage. You know, like, it's expressing how you, your expectations for them, not just demonizing something
yes,
else, right?
Exactly.
Or putting your head in the sand. And so, you know, and you can say, I don't know about this, but I need to learn and I'll get back to you. And I think to your original question about what they're posting, that is something we can control. And it's, or at least something we can more easily monitor. You know, gosh, once a week, just like randomly, just, hey, show me your TikToks. My kids don't post TikToks. Not because I told them not to. I've just gotten lucky so far that they're not, but they watch it. And I have to look, what are you sharing? What are you posting? And so you can look at that. And that should be part of the dynamic. You're paying for the phone. I get to see. If there's anything problematic, then we'll discuss it at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, because you need, because disseminating the information, resharing it, you know, even if you think it's just funny, it's you're not, it's mature humor. You're not ready to, you
right,
know, you're not ready.
We have to break
use.
That down because how your brain is processing it is obviously there's a breakdown there. Yeah,
and it lives forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
mm-hmm.
you know you're gonna want an after school job in a couple of years, kiddo. And if somebody looks at this and thinks that you're, you know, that you're mean to people, then they're not gonna want you there. And
yeah.
that's a fair assessment, right? So it's not easy, but I think
it's not. Good God, it is not easy. But I will say, Krista, it takes a village for all those kiddos. And it's one of the reasons that I love having you on the show consistently, because I think you have incredible insight. You give a look into the online world and you give some sense of, okay, here's a game plan. Here's how I go forward and I handle this. So I appreciate you always coming on every couple
Aww.
Of weeks. Thank you.
I love it. All
yeah.
right. You're so welcome. I love doing it.
Well, we love having you.
Anybody wants to reach me, yeah, like Krista Carnes 22 on Twitter or just Krista@KristaCarnes.com. We'd love to answer any specific questions anybody has if they want to bring it in. And yeah.
All right. Perfect. I was going to just ask you for that. So that's perfect. Krista Carnes, thank you so much. And we will talk in a couple of weeks.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you. Krista Carnes is our social media consultant right here on WICC. I want to welcome to the show this morning Daniel Maresi. So Daniel is the Republican endorsed candidate for the District 25th State Senate seat, and he is running up against State Senator, Majority Leader, I should say, Bob Duff, who many of you are very familiar with. Bob Duff is one of our frequent guests who come on the show during the legislative session. He's on Monday mornings alongside Tony Huang. The two of them come on to talk about the hot button topics that are being discussed in Hartford. So many of you are very familiar with Bob Duff. Many of you are served by Senator Duff because you live in his district. And so this morning we wanted to bring on his opposer and really get to know Daniel and really give you the best opportunity to know your candidates before the general election in November. So, Dan, welcome. Good morning. So glad you're here.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I can't complain, Dan. And yourself?
Well, I can't complain either after that great intro. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate
all good.
The platform.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dan, first of all, introduce yourself. Let our listeners know who you are.
Yes, so I'm Daniel Maresi. I'm obviously running against Bob Duff. I'm a Connecticut native. I was actually born in Norwalk, went to Trumbull High. And after that, I was in college, was a history major, education minor, played hockey, then had a little bit of a professional hockey career. And came back to Connecticut to start my life and was working at the post office, decided to get involved after all the stuff that happened the past couple years. And here I am talking to you.
So I can't help but notice, only because I did check your bio, Dan. I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't. I noticed you and I are the same age.
Absolutely.
You're young. I kind of
yes.
love that. Kind of. So
well,
you're 32.
So I just turned 33.
Oh, Okay, and sorry, an older guy.
No, it's just okay. Kidding. No, it's okay. As I like to always say, Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence at 33. And to me, like you just said before, it's important to know your candidates. And one of the big things in my campaign is I believe that this is not a Republican or Democrat election. To me, it's more of a referendum on Hartford and the mismanagement that's happened the last few years. And the whole idea of America and the whole idea of Connecticut is citizen representation. You know, a common cobbler can go up and stand up for his community. And to me, that's what it's all about. And when I started to get involved, I realized that there were a lot of things that a lot of the politicians in politics, they don't understand our generation's plights. And for me, it was really important to take this opportunity, not only just to run to oppose Mr. Duff, but to be a fresh voice for, you know, people our age who want to start a family and carve out our little own purpose of the American dream here in Connecticut. But we really can't because things are just too chaotic right now. And, you know, if I can, the least I can do is stand up and provide a different perspective, then that's what my campaign is going to be about as well.
So, Dan, I certainly am not bringing up age to make anybody feel uncomfortable, but I bring it up because it's the same thing I brought up actually the first time I had the former state senator William Haskell on the show, because he too, I think he yep. was the youngest senator in Connecticut's history. And I think there's something to be said about that. We're seeing younger and younger people get into politics and want to see changes. And I know just as a fellow millennial, it was a big change for even WICC when I took over the morning show, because we had never had this young of a host and we had never really had a full-time female
host
either.
You do a great job.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you. It's definitely a change of the times. And I think for younger voters, they're going to see that and they're going to love that. But, you know, for older voters, they may go, I don't know. So the reason I bring it up is how do you plan to help, you know, to help overcome that? You know, the people who, because look, I remember transitioning to this job and it was a transition. Let me tell you, it was a good year before I got my listeners to go, oh, wait, she's actually educated. She knows what she's talking about. This is exciting. Okay, great. Because they see the age, they hear about millennials, and we don't always have the best, I don't know, it would be a word for it. But, you know, people look at us as sometimes being lazy, you know, whatever the case may be. So what do you do for your older voters in Connecticut who are going, I see the age, and honestly, that's what they're judging by. What do you do for that?
Well, I what I do is I just ask them simple questions, you know, if their life has improved or not in the past few years, if they're worried about, as you talked about, their heating oil bill coming up. And I don't go to them to make them any promises that I'm going to go in there and try to sell them something, that I'm the new superstar who's going to fix all their problems, because that would be disingenuous. What I tell them is that, listen, my generation is just like your generation and the generation before that. You know, just because the times changed and, you know, we had a little different upbringing and we went to college and maybe our adult life started a little later, doesn't mean we aren't here now and we don't want to set up roots in the Nutmeg State and be different versions of our parents or loved ones who created this life for us. And I tell them that the job is citizen representation. So it's my job to show up, to listen, and to learn, and then to offer creative solutions and work together with the community to try to figure out what's best. Clearly, what has happened the last few years and what's happening in my district in Norwalk, there's a lot of problems. You know, we have the catalytic converter problem too. We have, you know, development issues. You know, we have the same inflation issues. And they want solutions, and I'm going there to willing to be a young guy who is very accessible on social media, and I just want to establish the fact that all I want to do is fight for them and bring a youthful energy just like they did when they were starting life here in Connecticut.
We're chatting today with Daniel Maresi, who is running for state senate. In fact, he's going up against incumbent Senator Bob Duff. And if you want to learn more about Dan after this interview, you can actually go to his website, Daniel Maresi, spelled out, danielmaresi.com. And actually, you'll see right there that it says, "Welcome to the Reimagined Republican." Why did you coin that term, Dan? What does that mean?
To me, what that means is a new generation of Republicans. Is I don't think we are the old New England Republicans anymore. We are radical individuals, our generation. To me, conservatism is about having a strong conservative moral and value-based laws in your legislature and your municipality. And if we have that, we can have a libertarian, vibrant town square where everyone has choice and values each other and respects each other. But the only way we can do that is if we go back to and we start agreeing on the things that made us all nutmeggers to begin with, which is our Connecticut common values and our American values. And we need to stop going into this group division. And I think that's one thing that is unique to our generation is we grew up in a time where, you know, everyone was pretty ubiquitous. We were measured based off of what we brought to the table and how creative we were. And I think we need to go back to that where we value the individual and we bring forth a little bit of a meritocracy again back to Connecticut.
What would you say, Dan, are some of your biggest takeaways? If you were to be elected into office, what would you want to do right away?
What I would want to do right away is anything in the legislature that is a boondoggling mandate, whether it comes to the health insurance exchange or small business taxes or diesel taxes, whatever we can do to relieve the pressure for the Connecticut citizen who is in a lot of pain right now in this economic climate is the first thing we need to do. We need to have real, tangible wealth going back to the people, not just more printing money or more handouts, because that's just only putting Band-Aids on the problems. And we see in Connecticut that things are getting at an inflection point because people are losing their autonomy and agency. And that is ubiquitous between Darien and Norwalk. And I think that if we can get the government off the backs of the people, that's a pretty good start. And, you know, the same thing, you have to look at all these state contracts. You know, one of the reasons we have the Eversource problem is because the state is working with Eversource directly and they up the sales tax fee because our state is functioning off of the sales tax. And the service fees reflect that. So we have a lot of mismanagement and we need to open up the books and have some hard conversations and try to figure out how we can get real wealth back into the people's pockets.
When I was watching one of your promotional videos, you said the current Senator Bob Duff enables bills in Hartford that essentially hurt our constituents. What has he done that you think is so awful to your constituents?
Well, the last 2 years, the way he managed the pandemic response was what I'm hearing when I go out campaigning is what really bothered, I think, not just Norwalk residents, but many residents around the state, is I think people were going through a time where they needed government resources and they needed government help. But what they did not need to do is they did not need the government to come in and tell them what kind of parent they should be, how they should be a mother, how they should run their business. And they put in a lot of these laws and edicts that really just took away livelihoods. And Mr. Duff showed no compassion. And frankly, he was one of the main spearhead people behind a lot of this legislation. And instead of actually going to his constituents and trying to figure out the best way to attack an unprecedented pandemic, he decided to take the ball and decide what's best for his district. And to me, once a representative starts to do that, he starts to lose touch with what the people want and what the people need. And I know it's a bigger problem than just one politician. However, it starts with a citizen standing up to a politician who they think has led their district in the wrong direction.
Dan, if you could reverse anything, one thing that's been done in recent years in Hartford, what would it be?
830G, I think.
And for people who don't know, what is 830G?
830G is the zoning bills that they have, which controls back into Hartford. To me, I think communities need to have vibrant town squares, even pedestrian driven. You know, that's what captures the spirit of Norwalk, the spirit of any town that you're in Connecticut. And to me, putting that decision in the hands of Hartford is only playing with fire, because once a problem gets away from or a situation gets away from the people, you start to go into a direction where the best interests of the district might not always be what's first and foremost on the minds of the people making those decisions. And to me, that's what representative government is all about. It's what local government's all about. We want housing and we want investment into our community, but it needs to be smart and it needs to be pragmatic. And the people have to have a say in it. I think a lot of the problems is no one has a say in what's happening to their communities, and it's causing a lot of tension. And it's also bringing in people that are becoming transient. Like Norwalk is, SoNo is becoming a very transient city, which is good. We want people coming in and we want people enjoying our beautiful downtown. But at the same time, we want people to set up roots here. We want people to have a little bit of stability. And if we're constantly developing and we're constantly adding more people, the city becomes chaotic, and then it's a trickle-down effect from there. And I think that that has had very bad repercussions on a lot of districts throughout Connecticut.
Dan Moresi, unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I really appreciate you coming on and just, again, giving even just some background and an idea of what you stand for, what your campaign looks like. And again, for people who want to learn more, if you want to connect with Dan, head on over to his website. It's Daniel Moresi, spelled out DanielMiresi.com. And Dan, I thank you so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate it, and thank you for the platform, and I hope to just keep learning and listening to your show.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Dan Moresi here on WICC, and again, Dan is the Republican-endorsed candidate running for the 25th District up against incumbent Senator Bob Duff in November.